She said she'd heard of them, and man, I have to quote for Mary more than Isaac because she left her cow. A year or more after I heard of them in the north, I heard nothing about their way, that is, their what they stood for, except that they used thee and thou. I saw a book written in the plain language by George Fox. I expect that's the famous Battledore, which he takes 32 languages and shows how all of them use thou in the singular and a different word in the plural instead of using the same word for both singular and plural. I remember that I thought it very ridiculous, so I minded neither the people nor the book, unless it be to scoff at them and at it. Though I thus despised this people, I had sometimes desired to go to one of their meetings. It's the attraction of something you disapprove of. If I could unknown, I think you understand that too. And to hear them pray, here she is again, the grown woman, still worried about how is the right way to pray. For I was quite weary of doctrines. You know the difference, don't you? Personal prayer and what Fox calls notions. But I believed if I was with them when they prayed, I should be able to feel whether they were of the Lord or not. I endeavored to stifle this desire, not knowing how to get to one of their meetings unknown. And if it should be known, I thought it would be reported that I was one of them. One day, as my husband and I were walking in the park was the large estate that they adjoined their own house, a man that for a little time had frequented the Quakers' meeting saw us as he rode by in our gay, vain apparel. I hadn't put on plain dress. These Puritans, as they were, still dressed pretty gay for a Quaker to look at. This stranger cried out to us against our pride, at which I scoffed and said he was a public preacher indeed, who preached in the highways. He turned back again, saying he had a love for my husband, seeing grace in his looks. She couldn't forget that. She would guess. And by the way, you get this impression that Isaac Pennington, Jr. was a very sweet, gentle spirit. You get it from the pamphlets he wrote, the Quaker pamphlets. In many ways, the most attractive. A lot of non-friends said he was the most attractive Quaker they'd met. The stranger drew near the railing between the park and the road. And spoke of the light and grace which had appeared to all men. My husband and he engaged in discourse. The man of the house coming up invited the stranger in. He was but young, and my husband too hard for him in the fleshly wisdom. Isaac out arguing. He told my husband he would bring a man to him next day that would answer all his questions or objections, who, as I afterwards understood, was to be George Fox. This very new Quaker convert wasn't willing to be beaten in argument. He said he'd bring one of his older associates. He came again the next day and left word that the friend he intended to bring could not well come, but some others he believed would be with us about the second hour. And so some other friends turned up, and she tells about how they behaved. Their solid and weighty behavior struck a dread over me. I now knew that they came in the power and authority of the Lord to visit us, and that the Lord was with them. All the room were sensible of the Lord's power manifest in them. I saw that the Lord would be just in casting me off and not giving me life, for I would not come from my beloved lusts to him for life. Oh, the pain I still felt. A little time after the visit to these friends, she says, a voice came to me on my bed one night, be not hasty to join these people called Quakers. And so she goes on and tells how much difficulty she had while she was pondering the conviction that the Quakers are right but the difficulty of joining them. And finally, she and her husband cast in their lot with friends. And Gully, who grew up in their household, did too. You see, they had some children of their own, but Gully, the stepdaughter now of Ivy Payne, lived in the household. Ivy Pennington spent a great many years in jail in the short period between their conversion, about 59, and the year of his death. And we know something of his outward life. I think I'll move over now to Thomas Elwood. He and his brother were both sent to a prep school, as we would call it, near Oxford, and when his brother was able to go to college, his father took him out of the school, the younger boy. The older boy naturally would be sent to college, even if you have to limit the younger boy's education. And so he played around at home. He also thinks he wasted his time and misbehaved. Nearly all these Quakers look back on their youth as a time of misspent and wickedness. Possible to exaggerate that in later years. And he had already been in London. In fact, he and his father, his father brought the whole family to London some years before, from Crowell, which is, you have it here on your map, you see it's up near Oxford. And they'd gone to London. And his family had known the Springett family. So in London, he became acquainted with little Gully. She was several years younger, but he, little boy, played with her. He says that when Gully went out in the coach, that means a baby coach, I guess, some kind of child's equipage, go-kart, he was allowed to go with her in the coach. He hadn't forgotten that. That was a very pleasant memory of his childhood. Well, then, some years later, when the war was over and the Elwood family thought it was safe to go back into Oxfordshire, which was a stronghold, had been a stronghold of the Royal Army, Elwood and his father found that the Penningtons, whom they had known in London, had moved to neighborhood. So they began to call on him. And his father said he wanted to go over and see the Penningtons. He took all the children along, and including young Thomas. And Thomas had two sisters and this older brother who had been going to college. And so they renewed their acquaintance. And ultimately, when the Penningtons turned Quaker, their old non-Quaker friends in the older days observed it, didn't like it. Quite a change. They behaved quite differently from the way they had. And they didn't enjoy their first visit very much. Very somber. And on the second visit, it was the same way, and young Thomas decided he'd get out of this somber company and hunt up Gully. Well, he found her picking flowers, I think, in the garden, and found that she'd gone Quaker too, to his great distress. Well, on one occasion, the whole family was over there, and the Springetts had some Quaker ministers. I mean, the Penningtons had some Quaker ministers there. And we have a description in this case from Thomas Elwood. These ministers, these Quaker ministers, had out-argued his father in their meeting, and that didn't suit the father very much. And finally, they went home. We have an account of what the Quaker ministers, one of them was Edward Burrow, the other was James Naylor, whose names you both know, both of which you know, who had been visiting at the home of the Penningtons, made this remark after the Elwood family left the house. As for the old man, he is settled on his lees, and the young woman is light and airy, but the young man is reached, and may we do well if he don't lose it. And what Thomas says after this is, I knew not what I ailed, but I knew I ailed something more than ordinary. I was sicker, worse than usual. Something was wrong with me. And my heart was very heavy. I found it was not so with my father and sister, for as I rode after the coach, I could hear them talk pleasantly. This the young boy, you see, rode on horseback, and his father and sister rode in the coach. He could hear them talk pleasantly, one to the other, but they could not discern how it was with me, because I ran on horseback, kept much out of sight. By the time we got home, it was night. Now, pretty soon, Thomas began to veer over toward becoming what was later called a decided friend. And that meant a good deal more a change of little matters of behavior than it did a matter of belief, at least for those that observed it. Of course, he wouldn't take off his hat in the presence of his father, although for a while he did, but he wouldn't take off his hat in the presence of anybody else in the usual way of courtesy. And he didn't make the usual bow and make the usual courtesies of behavior in ordinary experience. I'll summarize a bit of his further experience.